Gamer Nation podcast. I am your host, Pilot, and with me today is the Zombie Hood guys. So we have Ian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
So welcome back, everybody. Sorry for the long period between podcasts. Life has been a little busy, but we have been gaming and moving the ship forward as we normally do. So let's kind of roll right into what we had planned for you today, and that is what we've been up to. So why don't you start us off, Ian, and tell us what you've been playing?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Deus Ex Human Revolution in slow chunks, trying to get that beat. Playing some Forza 4, Dead Rising 2, I always forget which
off
one
the record.
Off the record, there we go. Play a little Dead Island, but really my main games right now are Battlefield 3 and FIFA 12, along with those other two, Deus Ex and Forza 4.
Oh, very nice. So what are your overall impressions? You don't have to get into details, just impressions.
Just impressions. Deus Ex, pretty good game. We've got some, you know, things about it that are like, eh. But it's definitely a good, like, one-time playthrough. Sit down on the weekend if you're a power gamer. If not, it takes about, like, a month or so. Forza 4, pretty much the same as any other car simulation game. You know, you start from the bare bottom and then work your way to the top, buying all these cool cars. But, of course, with Forza 4, they added this Top Gear option and the Auto Vista or Auto Vista, however you want to say that. Yeah, so that's pretty much a racing game as usual. And then Dead Rising 2, having fun with it. But, you know, I mean, we're from Zombie Hood, so of course we're going to enjoy killing zombies. And then what are the other ones? FIFA 12, always fun. It's good because now that I have a small one, a little one, that game I can kind of just sit back and sim through some games and just use one hand while the other hand's taking care of my kid. And then the final game is Battlefield 3. Only had a little bit of time with it so far, but what I've played, I've loved. So
what about you, Justin? What have you been up to?
I was playing Red Dead Redemption a while ago. I was playing through it again. That was fun. Obviously, Dead Rising 2 off the record, FIFA 12, Battlefield 3 I just got, and I played a lot yesterday. I raked up quite a bit. It was fun to go back and play Red Dead Redemption. I keep wanting to say Revolver, but it was fun to play through it again. I realized why I enjoyed it so much. FIFA 12 has been amazing. Unlike Madden, which just seems to be a rehash of the previous year's game, they overhauled the system with their new Impact Engine, and it's been very enjoyable. Although the Impact Engine does a lot of crazy stuff and has a tendency to give away penalties that are not penalties. But still, it's something new. They've tried something different, and I thought it worked out very well. And Battlefield 3, I think I've logged probably 5 or 6 hours in it, and it's been amazing. There's a couple of issues I have with it, but nothing game-breaking, and overall, it's been great. It's just fun multiplayer. I haven't even touched the campaign yet.
Yeah, yeah. I actually picked up Battlefield 3 myself. I haven't had time to put it in yet, but I got it. It's burning the hole in my hand. But a few things that I have been playing was a number of games from the Only on PSN campaign, including Sideway and Rocket Birds, Hard Boiled Chicken. Those are the two games that I've been playing.
Rocket Bird, Hard Boiled Chicken is one game, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, man, you like chicken games or bird games, I guess. Sorry. All right.
Yeah, no, Rocket Birds is a series, and this is their first attempt at a PS3 game. Both of them are side-scrollers, and both of them pretty decent, and reviews are up on the site. Serious Sam, The Random Encounter, and The Binding of Isaac, both of those are PC games, and they're both RPG kind of games. The Binding of Isaac is, I guess you call it a Zelda clone, but it plays a lot like the original Zelda, but it does a lot of interesting things on its own.
And when you say original Zelda, do you mean like the top-down?
Yeah, the top-down.
2-bit or 8-bit graphic kind of game?
Yeah, yeah, 8-bit graphics, top-down. You have a map and you move up to move, to move the screen up to go north on the map. You know, like just how Zelda works, that's what it is. It's just like Zelda. And I have been playing some Deus Ex myself.
How do you feel about it?
Well, I haven't gotten extremely far into it. I finished the first mission because I want to do like a perfect walkthrough.
Oh.
You know, where you do complete stealth. You know, you hack every terminal, like You don't set off any alarms, like that kind of a walkthrough. So it's been taking me a lot longer to get through it than it would if I just shot everybody up, which I'm dying to do now anyways. But one of the conditions is you can't kill anybody. So, so I'm working on that. But that's pretty much what I've been doing. So I know you guys wanted to get a little more into some of the games you were playing. So let's call that our first segment of the podcast, and let's dig a little deeper into some of these games. So why don't you start off with Forza 4 and, you know, give us your review.
All right. I won't give it a number scale because I think it sits pretty high with a lot of people. It's a racing simulation game, and it's a lot of fun. If you had Forza 3, you can import your save file, and they give you some cars and some money to kind of get started quicker. They have a new thing that's called World Tour Mode, which I kind of like, but I also kind of don't like. It's the dumbed-down version of going through the campaign, where it's kind of like, hold your hand, you race something, if you don't win, who cares, you keep going. It's just kind of like giving you a guided tour of the tracks, the cars, what you can do and whatnot. And then they have a new mode called Auto Vista. Again, I can never choose which one I want to call it. But you can use your controller, but it's essentially made to show off like the Kinect integration, because you can stand in front of your Kinect sensor and walk up to the car and open the hood, and you can sit inside the car and start it up. And it's really, really kind of a pain if you do it with Kinect. It's a lot more smooth if you have a controller. That's where I just don't know how to work a Kinect. But that's a cool mode, because actually a little secret in there is if you unlock all of the Auto Vista cars, you unlock the Warthog from Halo 4. So you can kind of walk around that. You can't drive it, but you can walk in there, sit in the seat, and like go in the gun and stuff. It's kind of cool.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, it's like 5 minutes of fun. Let's see, I'm trying to think of anything. I mean, they added a quick tune because they assume that everybody pretty much does the same thing, which is, you know, you're supposed to have a C500 race, you know, a certain level of car for a race, and everybody always pretty much gets to the highest level they can before it kicks them out of the race. So they have this new thing that's called, like, quick tune-up, that you can just choose your car and say, I want it to be this level, and then it gets it to that level for you. Which I'm not the biggest fan of, because I like to choose my parts and, you know, do my own tuning. So I guess it's not 100% taking control of your game.
Yeah, well, that's kind of half the game anyways, is custom tuning your car.
Yeah, definitely.
And
of course. But.
Well, because I also noticed that the Kinect integration was kind of sketchy on this game. There's like a lot of fine tuning, like you have to do with your hands, have to be in like certain spots, and it just didn't seem very fluid.
I don't know what to really say. I mean, I'm not obviously going to use it. It definitely felt like, you know, meant for more of like the people that are used to Mario Kart racing. Like I could see a young kid who wants to play his daddy's racer, and so you're like, okay, son, here's Kinect, and then it's pretty simple. I mean, the car drives for you, and then I think you can turn it on so there's gas and brake, but it drives for you. You just turn your hands left and right, and then it's an interesting experience, but not like blowing me away, and that's how I'm going to play from now on.
Yeah, it's not going to make you go out and buy a Kinect.
Yeah, well, I mean, I already have one. But yeah, other people might not say, I'm going to go get Forza 4 and Kinect because it's awesome. Hmm.
So how is it different than Forza 3?
you tell me. No, like I said, it has the World Tour Mode, which, like I said, kind of takes you around the world, obviously, and just does different little races for you. And then it has this The Top Gear edition. So if you're a fan of the show Top Gear, it has the voice of whoever the British guy is, the host of that show. And they'll throw in like little special races hosted by Top Gear. And so it's kind of cool. They have like these giant bowling pins that you're supposed to go around the track and knock down and get so many points. And it just kind of teaches you like how to control your car and not go too crazy and stuff.
Well, didn't Gran Turismo have a Top Gear integration too? Because I know there was a Top Gear test track that was on in Gran Turismo.
Was that Gran Turismo 5?
Yeah.
I only played that for a bit, so I'm not sure. But I'm wondering if maybe they just had the, because usually they have like the official tracks of like they have Laguna Seca and whatever it is, Spring Valley Road and whatever, Indianapolis 500. But yeah, I guess I'm not too sure. I can't say if I know that or not.
Yeah, I was just thinking that they either give out their license like they don't care, I could just give it out to anybody who wants it, or if there were special provisions being made to one or the other.
Yeah. I would think that because, I mean, Forza or Microsoft Studios or whatever, they seem to make a pretty big deal about having Top Gear. So I think that maybe Top Gear has finally sided with Forza and Microsoft.
All right. So let's, since you guys are big zombie fans, obviously, why don't you tell me a little bit about Dead Rising 2 add-on, I guess.
That's what it should be, actually. Yeah. It probably should just be an add-on for Dead Rising 2, but it's a whole other game that was... How much was the price on it? So
the full game?
Yeah.
Was it cheaper? I thought it was 50 still.
Was it 50?
Yeah, I traded a bunch of games there for that.
I'm sorry, I didn't even pay attention to the price, but it probably should just been an add-on because Dead Rising 2 off the record, it's a retelling of the same story from Dead Rising 2, but they have made some tweaks to the plot line. I haven't gotten far enough in to actually see all of them, but I was playing, I think on Monday, and they do have a new mode called Sandbox, which is you can just load into the game and beat the crap out of zombies in all the areas of the game and make a bunch of combo cards and mess around. And somebody actually joined my game and wanted me to help them beat the last and final boss. And so the last boss battle was the same with some slight variations, so I ended up beating it. And I know that the story changes a little bit, but essentially it follows the same general path. You fight all the basic same bosses. They might have one or two different cycles in there, but
yeah,
the main boss battles are all the same as far as I know right now. Do I regret paying $50 or whatever the price was it for it? No, I like it, but it probably... should have just been an add-on for Dead Rising 2.
Yeah.
Kind of the same way I think that ODST should have been an add-on, yeah. Or just a download content or add-on for Halo 3, I should say, instead of a full retail.
Yeah, because I had a lot of excitement for this Dead Rising 2 off the record because you get to play as Frank West, who's in the first game, who was, a pretty awesome character. And when the first Dead Rising 2 came out, it was like, oh, where'd Frank go? Who cares, kind of thing. So... playing through it again, which would probably be like the sixth or seventh time I've played through this kind of Dead Rising 2, just as a different character. It's lost its like excitement, but at the same time, it is still fun.
Yeah, I'm not as excited. I do want to find out what they changed in the story, but it's still very fun. They added a couple of new combo weapons you can make. But other than that, aside from adding the camera back in.
And the sandbox mode.
And the sandbox mode, there isn't a whole lot different with the game.
Yeah, it seems like they kind of just said, oh, we made a mistake by introducing Chuck into the storyline. Here's the guy you wanted all along.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, too. I think that's kind of what happened is that they created the game. People found out it was going to be a different character, and they got a lot of feedback or hate mail or whatever you want to say. They wanted Frank West back, and then they went and did it. The problem is that they might have, some people, fans might have been put off by the price of the game and, basically having to buy a whole new game. Again, they did add the sandbox feature is very cool because it's just basically you load in. They do have psychopaths in it. I have played far enough into it where I've met a couple of actual psychopaths that you had to fight. And then some of the survivors act as psychopaths too, and they like chase you down and try and beat you up. But it's also very cool just to go around the area, and obviously you can have another player join you, and you just create combo weapons, slaughter zombies, put on weird costumes or whatever that you want to do. Go to the new world because they did add that. They did add a new area of Fortune City that you can enter. Was it the Uranus Zone?
Yeah, it's called. Welcome to the Uranus Zone.
And so, I think that's the first thing Ian and I did when we loaded in is we went to the Uranus Zone to go see what, it was all about, what the new edition. It's kind of disappointing now that I look back on it. It's smaller than I would have expected.
Yeah.
For that zone, but overall, just going into sandbox zone and being able to do that, not have to worry about a mission and like being able to have an infinite mode like the first Dead Rising did when you beat it fully, is nice. I do enjoy that. That's a really good add-on.
Now, is that where they took away the timer so you don't have like that mission timer all the time?
Exactly. There's no missions, there's no timer. It's a sandbox mode. You just go in and you can do whatever you want for how long you want. There's no timer. And the other cool thing is you can make a bunch of money in the sandbox mode, and that carries over into the actual your actual story mode, so you can use that money in the story mode if you'd like. As well as the sandbox mode also has challenges, and there's like I don't know, 75 to 100 different challenges you can do in a sandbox mode, and they all give you more cash for completing them. You know, they have silver, bronze, and gold, obviously. And obviously they have achievements tied to getting a bunch of silvers or getting a bunch of golds or whatnot.
So, now, is this 100% separate from Dead Rising 2?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it pretty much, it's the retelling of Dead Rising 2 as Frank West as the main character. Like a lot of the psychopaths are in there, but they switch the story up a little bit, you know, different things. Like if you played and beat Dead Rising 2, all the main plot points from the first game, I assume, and from what I can see, are still in this new, the new Dead Rising 2.
Yeah.
So now is your save pulled in from one to the other? Like if you had a bunch of stuff in the first save, can you pull that into this game and play from there?
No, as far as that's not possible. It's because it's completely different. There's nothing's compatible. You just bought the new game and you just play as Frank, which is okay. When you think about it, it's interesting because after Dead Rising 2, they did release, I think, Dead Rising 2 Case West,
yeah.
Where like Chuck and Frank meet up, and now they're like trying to help to solve the people that make Zombrex or the conspiracy you find out in Dead Rising 2. So like it kind of messes with the canon that they had created because now Frank's the main character in the new series.
All right, so what about Dead Island sticking with the zombie theme?
I'll give my quick 2 cents on it that it's a very pretty game. Very, very beautimous, if you will. But it kind of runs the same problem that I ran into with Borderlands because it is meant to be a co-op, like four-player co-op, level your person up kind of thing. As a one-player mode, like, I was really getting into it. I'm like, all right, cool, I get to find some zombies. Oh, what happened? I'm running on the beach. All right, shoot this guy in the face, which you don't get a gun for a while, so I probably have to take that back. But anyways, the minute that a friend of mine joined who was, like, a higher level, and it might just be his playstyle, he just immediately like started running to the different quest givers because it plays more like a, you know, you get a quest, go kill this guy, get some XP, go find this person kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I tend to find those kind of games, they get boring because usually for whatever reason, apparently I'm bad at the game or something, I'm always behind in levels. So I just kind of sit there while the other person runs around, they'll come by, throw a weapon on the ground, here, use this, and then run away. It's like, can I just play the game? So that's my feeling towards it, because I guess it was just a bad experience. But I think if I could just enjoy it, I think it'd be a pretty cool game.
Yeah.
So now, oh, go ahead.
From what I played it, like I played it a little bit while I was already in. It seems like it'd be a cool game, but to me it wasn't a game that I was willing to pay full price for. Like when I find it for $30 or something on sale, I'll probably pick it up and then ask a couple of my friends who have the game to just go and play it with me. But like Ian was saying, you run into the issue, and it kind of is the same thing as Borderlands. If someone's a higher level and they, you know, they're like, oh, well, just go start up your game and I'll help you out. And they come in with a higher level. It takes the fun factor away because they can just demolish everything right off the bat. And that, you know, you're having trouble. You just basically sit there. They earn all the XP for you or do all the
And just a quick side story to that. Me and Justin and two other friends are playing Borderlands, and my character was so low level I couldn't really kill anything. I was actually able to sit in the game. I went to a fast food place, got some food, came back, ate my food, drank my soda, and by the time I was done, there was a pile of weapons at my feet, and I was like 10 levels higher.
Yeah, and that seems like it is. But the other thing that I had trouble with is like Ian was saying, it takes a while to get an actual firearm in that game, apparently. And I have trouble with the first-person melee. Like, that was, I would kind of, that would seem like work to get through for me. I don't enjoy that, like having to do that all the time. The only game I've been able to do that in is Fallout. And that was just, man. But that has like the VADs in it. So you can just switch to VADs and I can just power through things, which to me makes things go quicker. So, well, Ian said it was beautiful and stuff. It seems like it could be very fun. To me, it's not worth the full price.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the first-person melee stuff. I mean, it's been done before, but it's not always done well.
It was done okay. I didn't see any real big problems with it. I ended up having more fun, instead of swinging at things, actually just like picking up edge weapons and just chucking them at zombies, because you can throw weapons. And it did have that interesting system where you can, like, instead of just doing an automatic swing, you could like flick the
stick,
and you could do like direction where you were cutting, And I thought you could, like, sometimes insta-cut a head off a zombie.
Yeah, if they're running up to you, you could, like, take a swipe at the head, where normally it would take, like, a few hits. You could, like, swipe at their head, and all of a sudden their head just flies off, which is cool.
Nice.
It was an interesting dynamic. I don't know if I would have the patience to go and learn that and become good at it.
Yeah, it's like the flick stick that they introduced into, like, Madden. And
yeah. Yeah, the getting through the melee weapons initially would be my issue, because I would find it boring and, like, tedious.
Yeah.
I just don't enjoy the first-person melee thing.
Here we've been playing some Gears of War 3.
We actually, I had the game pre-ordered and I was going to buy it because, you know, I bought the other two. But as far as, like, multiplayer goes, I usually never play those games unless it's the Horde mode. And so we had this big, what even is called big? It was four people. We went by my cousin's house and played some Horde mode in Gears of War 3, which is actually always just a blast. I don't know if you've got anything really to say about it.
I've never been a huge Gears fan. Like, the story, I mean, it's kind of interesting, but, like, the story mode was never that big a deal to me. But I've always loved the Gears of War Horde mode. I thought it was done well. I thought this one is done even better than the previous two with the additions they made to it. Of, like, you earn money and then you can buy, like,
turrets and walls.
Turrets and walls and traps and stuff and, like, decoys and all this other stuff. And you can level up your, you know, whatever your
defense,
you're
finding.
I thought it was done really well. I thought the addition of, like, every 10th round or whatever it is, you run into a boss that you have to beat that's a special boss that has to have special things done. If they added new features to freshen up the Horde mode, it just wasn't the same thing. And, you know, going into Horde mode, I was, like, being a Halo fan as I was happy that basically Halo just copied the Horde mode from Gears of War when they did ODST and they had the what they call Firefight, which is actually just Horde mode. Because Horde mode was done so well in Gears of War 3.
Yeah, I played a bunch of Horde mode myself, though I wasn't able to. I played Horde mode before the game came out, and I was only able to play to level 10, and we fought the boss, and then it ended. But I found it was a lot of fun, and it seemed like, at least for me, like initially, like I wasn't able to play this all the way through, but I just kind of stuck by one turret and kind of leveled the crap out of it. And then, people would just run inside the building, get everything chasing it, run out, and then I would just take it down.
Well, that's an interesting tactic.
We were sitting inside
the building.
And we were all taking, like, a place to look. So we were just watching our doors, killing things as they came in. The problem was is when you would get to a boss, as you got higher up, they became pretty difficult to handle.
Yeah, because you have to do, like, you know, hit him with a flamethrower, and once he's hit, then his armor falls off, and you have to shoot him in the special spot. Like,
and while that's going on, you have, like, boomers and all the, you know, like, the regular, like, top-tier Horde enemies coming at you, making it a pain in the ass while you're trying to take out the boss. You're being swarmed by
bad guys.
Bad guys. There we go.
Yeah, no, we found that the boss is pretty interesting, that you have to... It's not just shoot them as much as you can. You know, there is some strategy to it.
Yeah, that was the kicker that we found out what we were playing.
And,
you know, after, like, and we were playing on a fairly low level just because.
Oh, yeah, we were playing, like, casual difficulty.
Or something like that. And even that, you know, I mean, I'm not a seasoned geared player by any means, but when you got to those bosses, it became, like you said, having to actually have some strategy and hit a certain spot cause a certain reaction became difficult. But like I said, it adds a new element to Horde mode. They haven't just gone, oh, it's been successful in the other two. They've added elements to it to make it fresh and new, something different than what was previously done.
Yeah.
And I guess the point was that when you get to those bosses, you couldn't do what you were doing, which is just stay in one spot because there's too much happening. Like, you had to, like, it was just running around, you know, scared, I'm being chased by a boss again. You know, let's run around the circle, see if we can lose it.
All right, so let's talk about the game we all played with Deus Ex. What do you guys think of that?
I had, when I first started it up, because Justin didn't play it at all. When I first started it up, I had mixed emotions about it because it was like, and as I'm trying to put a review together, I'm giving away all my juicy tidbits of my review. Anyways, it feels like Blade Runner, the movie, collided with Deus Ex, but that makes sense because they both kind of stem from that cyberpunk genre. And so at first I was like, what? They're just ripping that off. And then the more I played it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. All right. And this is more like design and character stuff. Like, Adam Jensen, the main character, for whatever reason, he looks like a bird to me when he talks. Like, I feel like I want to hold some seed out when he's talking to, like, doing a cutscene, and he's just going to, like, peck away at it. I don't know, like, if it's just the animation that they did for the cutscenes, but that kind of bugged me at first, but the more I got into the game, the more I was like, all right, I'm enjoying this. I like that you level up and you can feel like you actually feel pretty awesome. Like, you feel like a pretty powerful character, because I do a lot of, like, the stealth and the hacking, but I'm still not afraid to, you know, sneak up on a guy and kill him or knock him out or whatever, or get in some firefights. But I feel like their leveling system isn't that expansive. Like, you can pretty much have a decently built character by the time you're close to the end.
Yeah, it seems like the upgrades kind of come fast and furious.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that you can, you know, collect all of your weapons or whatever you find in the environment and just go sell it and trade that in for a level up point or a praxy point or whatever it's called. So I found myself doing, because I'm another one that's like, you know, even though there's a main story, I'll be investigating Grandma Bertha's cabinets in an apartment somewhere not that I'm supposed to be. And grabbing her can of peas and selling it. Not that you can do that in the game, but to me, I'm pretending that that's what's happening.
Well, yeah, it pretty much is. I mean, whatever you find in the environment, if you could pick it up, you could sell it. I mean, you know, you walk into somebody's kitchen and take a can of beer and sell it.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little bit of a thief, Adam Jensen is. I thought that, I think there's like 10 weapons or so in it. I wanted more of, like, because you have an SMG, an assault rifle, a pistol, a revolver. It's like, that's the genre and they all look the same. I wish there was kind of like a mixture of these futuristic looking weapons. Even if they took the same ammo, did the same damage, like just something to make the world seem bigger. Because that was the thing, is it was really pretty, but at the same time, you know, it felt really confined and like, you know, it's this gigantic world, but it's beyond that invisible wall and you're stuck in the alleyway with parts harvesters that are talking crap to you.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like the game really tries to force you to play it a certain way. Well, maybe not force, but it encourages you to play it in a certain way. And to me, it kind of feels limiting. You know, like, they want you to play this as a stealth game, but mm-hmm. then they give you all these, you know, these weapons and these, you know, enhancements and augmentations that kind of help you do melee stuff, and it makes it cool to kill people, but then you don't get as much XP, and then you don't get all the benefits to playing the level in a stealth mode.
Yeah.
So it kind of doesn't really choose one side or the other.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, now that you mentioned that, like, I just thought of this now, like, it feels like the way that it's built, they could have done it more like a Zelda, where you level up, but you get specific things at certain levels, because I think that would have put more balance on it. Like, for me, I put all my money or my praxy points into the thing that's called, like, the Typhoon, which is you hit the button and Adam goes into this like little stance and all this stuff explodes around him because he's essentially shooting out. It's like an aerial attack and it's really powerful. So I'm playing it on the hardest level. And when I get to a boss battle, which is another thing, is there boss battles, you're pretty much just confined to one room against a ridiculously powerful boss. Well, I had this Typhoon ammo and two hits with that, they fall over dead, and it's like, oh, that was exciting, cool. Now I get to watch cutscene.
Yeah, I mean, some of it feels a little overpowered. I mean, especially when you do the augmentations to be able to fall from big heights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can pretty much escape anybody by just jumping off a building.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I was kind of like mentioning, is like, it's so cool to feel that powerful, but at the same time, it's like, you're just kind of toying with your enemies at certain points. Like, there's no, I'm playing on the hardest mode, and really I feel like I'm playing on the easiest mode.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tailor-made to how, like, it has an idea of how you should play, but if you don't play it that way, it's okay. But then again, they add all these enhancements, so, like, it doesn't really matter which way you pick.
Right.
Because you'll just, you know, beast through the game anyways.
Yeah.
So, all right, so this is going to bring us to our first break, so stick around and we'll be back soon. And we're back. So, Let's go into the next topic here for the podcast, which is I read an article on Yahoo the other day that gave a list of electronics that they feel are going to be outdated in the near future. And on that list was video game consoles. And their particular vision was that this, like all consoles, are going to be miniaturized and put into televisions and become part of the television set itself. Now, I had a couple of things to say about that specifically, but I'll let you guys comment on it first. So what are your reactions to that?
Well, as we were kind of chatting a little bit about it beforehand, I'm kind of up in the air about it, just in the sense of consoles not necessarily being that big of a thing anymore, but that depends on how well cloud services do. But this specific thing where it talks about, like, what is it, the online for Vizio that's built into the TV, can't say I'm the biggest fan of it, and I don't think it'll really take off.
I liked what you were saying earlier, like you mentioned, we were talking about it before, a little bit before we started, is that, you know, if you do this, I think you're right, then that means each console provider right now, Xbox and Microsoft are the same, the Xbox, the PS3, you know, Nintendo, they're all going to have to be associated with some TV producer or, you know, like Microsoft. They might even create their own TV. And while that might be, you know, good for them, good for their business, it's not going to be good for the fan who then might, what do you do if you want to own a PS3 and you want to own a 360, or you want to own a 360 and a Nintendo product? Because are they all going to, you're going to be able to combine them into one TV? Is that going to be something like you ordered the TV online, you're like, I want it to have the 360, the PS3, and the Nintendo product in it? Or does that mean you're going to have to buy separate TVs to go and do it? Or, you know, something you mentioned, is it just like a peripheral that you're able to buy and add on to it? You know, it seems like a good idea in theory, but in practice, it just seems so impractical right now to be doing it. Just maybe 20, 30 years down the road, but I don't see it happening in any time, like, you know, 5, 10 years, just because of the economics of it and, you know, what it would do to the consumer currently.
Yeah, well, I think it brings up a lot of issues. I mean, even 20 or 30 years down the line, it still is going to bring up issues because it makes a lot of big assumptions that your Sony console and your Xbox console and your Nintendo console are going to be like things of the past, and that there's just going to be one video gaming company. So when, if you want to play video games, you're playing the Playbox or whatever. And that's the only option you have, and it's going to be in every TV. And if that was the case where there was only one company, I would say that would make more sense. But you have three big players, you know, with Sony, Xbox, you know, Microsoft, and Nintendo. So that's a big assumption that everything is going to come together and become one company.
I can't necessarily say that I see it becoming one company, but as, like, you know, smartphones are taking off and turning into tablets. Tablets are turning into TVs and laptops. Like, everything is kind of merging into one thing. I could see TVs that essentially already have Wi-Fi enabled. They have a Netflix application. You could have, like, I could totally see Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony making their, some, you know, the Sony TV app. And then you'd have those games pretty much on demand. But there's also, I think most companies take hits when they make their consoles until, they, you know, later down the road when they finally have a profit from them. I could see them adopting it just because they don't have to produce a console. They can just make it in-house, and then, you know, nobody actually has to buy the thing.
Well, I think a big problem, too, is that even today, they could easily take, you know, your cable box and make it part of your TV with today's technology.
Yeah.
But they don't, because each company has their own thing, and they can't just get together and say, all right, so for the Northeast, there's only company A, B, and C. So we'll only sell these TVs there and have every cable provider give us chips, and whichever, you know, company you want to use, you just plug it into that port on the back of your TV. I mean, it doesn't work like that. You know, they just sell one product to everybody, and then you get the peripheral that you need. Mm-hmm. To fit your local service. And I think, you know, video games would have to be the same thing, only because there's so much competition.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd have to go and buy your TV, and then you get your peripheral box for whatever, you know, service you want to need. Now, it's not a matter of if it can be done, because obviously I think it could be done now,
mm-hmm.
where they can integrate a PlayStation into a television as is. But it's whether or not people are going to want to pay for that. And then that brings up a whole new set of issues on top of that, including, you know, how you're going to upgrade the software and how you're going to upgrade the hardware if you ever want to upgrade the hardware. So it just seems to bring up a lot more problems than it solves those problems.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, and I agree. I guess the only thing I could see is what Ian was getting at is that it becomes like, you know, kind of an application that you can just download into like a, you know, a hard drive that's internally stored in the TV or something. So that way you can make a decision of whether you want like the application for Xbox or Microsoft, I should say, or Sony or Nintendo. Like you said, it brings up, you know, then you have to upgrade the software. And if you want to upgrade the hardware, you know, how do you go about that? It seems really difficult. And then if, you know, the other assumption is that if you need something like a hard drive or an internal chip or something, which provider is going to pay for that to be in the TV? Does the TV company have to do that? Or does the video game company have to do that? You know, where are they going to get the money to put in these extra functions that are going to be needed on this TV that's being created? I guess where the article where it mentioned that the OnLive is doing that, you know, if OnLive is paying to integrate into Vizio, then you don't have to worry about that. But while Sony has its own TV company, is Microsoft going, like I said before, are they going to want to pay somebody to do that, or are they just going to create a TV so that, you know, like you were saying, you can buy one TV, but then it's not compatible with, you know, if you want to play a Microsoft thing or a Nintendo thing.
Yeah, I think a big problem just comes into upgrading in general, whether it's just the hardware or if it's software or anything like that. I mean, things have a useful life, and then once that useful life is over, those products become completely obsolete. So in the case of a video game system, you know, the ideal lifetime of a system is about, I don't know, 6 to 8 years. You know, that's what Sony would like to do. But when you integrate that with your television and your everything else, now you got to get rid of your entire home entertainment center to upgrade one piece of the puzzle. Because, you know, your TV is always going to be your TV, and unless a major TV technology comes out, which they don't generally come out very often, you know, you can use that TV for a long time. And the same thing with your optical media kinds of devices, like your Blu-ray player or your DVD player. I mean, there was a number of years between those two technologies. But video games are a lot faster when it comes to the life cycle of their product. So now you have the PlayStation 5, let's say, and the PlayStation 6 comes out. So now your PlayStation 5 system is obsolete. Now you're going to go out and buy a whole new TV and everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, we even experience those problems today with, you know, phones taking over for the GPS devices. You know, it used to be where if your GPS died, at least you still had the phone. But now your phone is your GPS, is your everything else. When that dies, you don't have anything.
Yeah.
The more advanced you get, like, the more you fall back behind.
Yeah. Well, just quickly to your point of actually having a system integrated in a TV, I don't think, like, I could totally see Sony doing something like that where they integrated in one of their TVs because they already won the Blu-ray battle, and they would totally love to own on TVs as far as TVs and games essentially as one. But I really don't think that consumers, even 30 years down the line, consumers are going to, like you said, buy a TV specifically because it has this game system, or buy, like, I have to buy a game system, so I have to buy this specific TV. I think it would be more like Sony has PlayStation 5 integrated in it. Hey, that's a cool bonus feature, or you can have PlayStation 5 by itself. Like, that seems a little more reasonable to me and more likely to what they would do. Not, like, I didn't get a chance to really read through all of the Yahoo article, but kind of what I was saying before, I could definitely see these game companies just relying solely on, like, cloud services. So essentially, yes, you'd have your games in one place, but it wouldn't be a Sony PlayStation TV, a Microsoft Xbox TV, and a Nintendo, you know, whatever it is at the time, TV. it'd be, you have access to these different apps and whatnot.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, your competition is going to be there, and it's going to come down to buying this TV because it has PlayStation or buying that TV because it has Xbox, and whether or not those brands would have a version for PlayStation and a version for Xbox. Like, you know, Toshiba will have their PlayStation Toshibas and their Xbox Toshibas. I mean, it could happen, and, you know, even Sony's been kind of playing around with these notions with that new 3D television that's branded PlayStation.
Oh, really?
Are you talking about that bundle pack where they were trying to push 3D TVs by offering, like, it was a PS3 bundle pack where you got,
with
like,
a TV and
it was
glasses.
A 3D TV, and it was, like, $500.
It wasn't
a very, like, big TV. It was, like, something like...
It was, like, 23 inches, I think, 24 inches.
Something like that. It was $500. You got a PS3 and the 3D TV with it. And that's when you begin to talk about this. That's what I began to think about too. Was like they were pushing that as a bundle pack.
But that to me just sounds like them trying to own the 3D market. I know it's like probably not even comparing the same thing, but to me it's more like we definitely want you to buy the PlayStation 3 because it has 3D. And by buying that, we're going to help you out by giving you this 3D TV and these glasses. Because Xbox 360 can't, I mean, it can do 3D, but not, it can do, I know there's an arcade game that does 3D, but I don't feel like the push is that for 360 to be 3D.
Yeah, but the 360 has been coming out with some 3D stuff recently.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess I didn't realize that one.
Yeah, I mean, it does 3D, but it's not as integrated as PlayStation has been with 3D.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everything is like 3D on PlayStation now. Or at least has the ability to go 3D, whereas 360 is just starting.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's what I was thinking of. Because, I mean, you know, PS3 is a Blu-ray player. To me, PS3 is a Blu-ray player first, like the most greatest Blu-ray player because it can update to almost anything. And then it's a gaming console. And I guess I'm an Xbox fanboy by saying that, but...
To me, it's not that. It's just that all your friends play on Xbox.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
PS3 has great games. It has God of War. I mean, you like the Uncharted series.
Metal Gear, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a whole other story.
Yeah, another topic.
So, all right. So I think we're pretty set on that, and we'll move over to the final segment, which is all this pre-ordering. That's been the big push for pre-ordering that's been going on recently. So it seems like pretty much nowadays anything you go, any title that's coming out is going to have these pre-order bonuses. And it's been getting kind of crazy recently, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I can't remember if we may have talked about this before. But either way, just a quick story to share. And I think this is where the topic came from was when I went in to go pick up my Dead Rising 2 copy, I was put off big time by the GameStop employee that was working there. He had to be maybe 18, probably not. He was probably 17. But my first instance, and this is me just kind of complaining, so you can ignore it if you want, but is for some reason that store has this thing about calling the customer like, hey, brother, hey, bro, hey, man, you know, hey, chief, stuff like that. And that drives me up the wall. So he was like, hey, brother, how's it going? Oh, what are you going to pre-order today? And like, I was like, no, I'm just here to pick up a game. He's like, oh, well, did you know if you pre-order, you get it on the day? I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the point of pre-ordering. Okay, well, I see, you know, like, he's just driving the point of pre-ordering. And then he said to me, people think that you can just go in a store and buy a game, but you got to make sure to pre-order it nowadays. And I almost wanted to reach across the counter and just kind of slap him and say, listen, little guy, listen, kid. I don't know if I'm turning into just a grumpy old man or something, but... This is really like I'm going to a game store. I would like to have the notion that I'm going to be able to buy a game if I want it, not have to pre-order it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they assume that you're idiots right off the bat. I mean, they really think you're stupid. Like you've never played a video game in your life, yet you just happen to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was, I mean, when I went in there and told him that I pre-ordered Dead Rising, because I know Dead Rising is kind of an underground hit. He was like, oh, that game. You know, I didn't play that very much. I was like, really? You're going to be condescending to me because of the game I play?
Which is funny because I didn't pre-order Dead Rising 2 off the record either. And when I went into the, I live a county over from Milwaukee. And when I went over to my GameStop to just pick it up, the guy that was behind the counter was like, you didn't pre-order this. And I had talked to him. This was the guy I talked to about pre-ordering games earlier. He's like, oh yeah, we have a copy. Well, when I went back to pick up Battlefield 3, I didn't talk to the same guy. I met some, I don't know if he was a new employer or whatnot. And he did the same thing. He said, the first thing he's asking, you know, are you going to pre-order anything? And I'm like, dude, you just pulled up my file while I was getting my copy of Battlefield 3. You can see I have four other games already pre-ordered and paid off. When I said something that they said, he's like, oh, so you're not going to get Skyrim? And I'm like, if I wanted to buy another game, I would have pre-ordered it already. I have no use for Skyrim. I mean, I like RPGs, but, you know, the medieval time set was just not for me. But they really pushed it, you know. And one other time while I was in there, there must have been a mother who was probably for a teenage kid. And she was buying, I think she was reserving Skyrim or something. And this, it was the store manager, and he was trying, I know it's his job to try and push sales, but he was trying to push her to pre-order some, like, bundle pack that came with Skyrim or something, and trying to get her to put $5 down on it. But he didn't tell her at all that she doesn't get that $5 back at all if the kid doesn't want it or if he doesn't need it, that $5 can only be traded back in for store credit to put towards another pre-order. Because the thing is, if you don't pick up your pre-order, you don't get that money back ever. And you have, I think you have, there's a set time you have to pick up your game too, or they just sell it and you're, you know, out of luck and you have to just take your store credit and put it towards something else. So the whole pre-order craze for games is, to me, just getting out of hand. Cause like Ian says, you can't just walk into a game store and buy a game you want anymore. You have to have pre-ordered it or you're just, you know, out of luck. It's really annoying.
Well, that's the thing. Like most people know that you never have to pre-order anything, because nowadays they print plenty of copies. You know, this isn't like the 80s or like the 90s where, you know, the new Mario game came out and you couldn't get it for a couple of weeks till after release. You know, these days there's plenty of copies going around, and they do these pre-order things. Well, they want you to pre-order it so they know what, they have a good idea of what the sales are going to be. And, you know, they want to know how many to print. So, you know, it helps them out by knowing how many pre-orders they got. But it doesn't really do anything for you, the player. And, you know, now they just started, well, they didn't just start, but they've been doing this for a little while where they're, you know, they say, oh, if you pre-order, you get a character skin or something like that. But then what they do is they slap you in the face about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months after release, where they sell all that pre-order bonuses for DLC.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, I think, is that, like Ian was saying, that, you know, the kid was saying, oh, you can't get a copy if you don't pre-order. Because I believe what they do now is that they only order so many extra based off of, like what you were saying, what they get for pre-orders. So that, you know, before where they might have had extra copies around, they generally don't do that. And what happens is they just wait till, like, somebody doesn't pick up a pre-order within their time frame, and then they just throw it back out on the shelf. And therefore, even though they didn't sell that pre-order, somebody didn't pay for it fully, they still got their $5 for a pre-order. So they still got a little bit of money. And just going in and having someone, like, I know it's essentially a good business practice, but it's terrible customer service to just keep asking somebody if they're going to pre-order something. You know, you're going to pre-order this? You're going to pre-order this? I'm like, no. And then on top of that, their pre-order releases can be really annoying, because they like call your phone number, they send you texts and emails. I mean, when FIFA came out, I had actually worked a third shift. I got off of work at 8 a.m. and I had to, my commute out of Milwaukee, I had to go through traffic. So I didn't go home till 9. I didn't get into bed until 9:30. In the morning. And so I'm sleeping at like 1:30. They called me like, you know, FIFA's in. I'm like, yeah, I'm not an idiot. I know you got my copy of FIFA. You just woke me up from sleeping. I've been up for like the last 22 hours, you know, doing stuff. I'd really like to just sleep and get through this. I'll come pick it up at 5 o'clock. You know, they try to create a buzz about something. They do those midnight releases and all that. I'm like, I'm an adult. I mean, if I was 17, that might be cool, but I just picked a game up. I have to go to work, you know, the whole ordeal type.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm even more inclined to go to Amazon or something like that. just so that I don't have to hear the pitch about what's coming out and what do I need to do to pre-order this or that. It's like, I'll let you know when I'm ready to buy something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And until then, leave me alone and just ring me up already.
just be cordial. Let's have a conversation about what video games they're playing, you know, how much fun we're having them. I don't need to hear a pitch about, you know, how I should buy Skyrim or something, or Skyrim's going to be totally awesome. Like you said, they treat you like an idiot, like you haven't done that. I can see, you know, if you see a mother or what's obviously a father coming in or something, but...
Hey, watch it.
Well, okay, fine. Our mother or our father coming in or something like that. I mean, I know what I want. I've been playing video games for the last, you know, 21, 22 odd years. I know what I'm looking for. I understand what I'm looking for. It's like you said, it's a lack of customer service and a lack of respect for the customer and their intelligence, which is just telling it sometimes at GameStop. And it's really annoying.
Well, it's also that too, because, you know, these aren't the days of things are selling out like crazy and... The notoriety of all these titles may not be known to everybody. I mean, if you went up to somebody that wasn't into video gaming and you said, "Oh, Skyrim is coming out," it wouldn't even flinch. Like, who cares? You know, even if you said like Elder Scrolls, "Oh, Elder Scrolls, check that out." I mean, it doesn't have the same notoriety. So when you're trying to sell those kinds of pre-orders, it's even a harder sell to those that don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And when they, and then they say, oh, if they tell you that, oh, well, Skyrim is coming out, you should pre-order that, then they kind of know that you're not an idiot, but they treat you like one anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, to what Ian's point was, you know, I hate the surprise sometimes that, like, oh, like, if they see him ordering Battlefield 3, you're going to get Modern Warfare 3? No, I don't really have any need for it at all. It's like a sense of shock. Like, why aren't you buying both? Well,
what are you doing in my store?
Yeah, I know what I want. I understand what I'm looking for. I'm not interested in that game anymore. I have all that I got down. You know, I know what I'm doing. So, and you know, on top of that, like you were mentioning, all like that they put out all these extra skins or like these extra pre-order bonuses that you can get for free and whatnot. I guess it's nice to get the free content, but I'd really like it's become a nuisance. I mean, FIFA 12, I specifically went to GameStop to get, because they were offering, like, for their Ultimate Team, they were offering 24 free gold packs.
Just found out Amazon did, too.
Oh, Ian says Amazon had that, too. I thought it was only, you know, when I looked at the GameStop website, it seemed like they were the only people that had it. I didn't know Amazon was doing the same thing. Otherwise, I probably would just got it through Amazon and been done with it. You know, it's like they make it an inconvenience because you don't, they get such good bonuses for pre-ordering. It's like you feel you have to order it there. And again, I know that's a good business practice on their end. I can appreciate that, but it's just, as a customer, it's so frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one thing if that content stayed exclusive and you were able to enjoy that because you pre-ordered it. But then what they do is they say, okay, now we're going to make a new DLC pack, and they take all the pre-order bonuses from every store and sell it. And now anybody can get all that pre-order bonuses for one price. So it's no longer exclusive, and it kind of renders it useless to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, in that aspect, I kind of do agree with that. I like that because I like being able to access that content. But I understand what you're saying. It's like, well, why did you even purchase the game from there in the first place? Well, you did get the content for free, but I like the fact that I'm able to purchase something if I wanted, but I just don't get it for free. But at the same time, it's like, you know, like Gears of War, I think the like different places you order it, you got different skins for the Lancers and the weapons.
You had to unlock it because you got the beta. Access to the beta. I mean, we probably got skins too.
There was tons of different skins, I guess. I was listening to some kid watching a video on YouTube, and I guess Jack in the Box had a special skin that was handed out if you, like, got it at, like, the Jack in the Box. And, of course, we don't have Jack in the Boxes up here. I mean...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, some restaurant, but I know they have different pre-order bonuses all over the place.
Jack in the Box, is that a weapon in the game? But now I know, yeah, I got you.
It's just crazy. It's you know, I guess like Ian said, sometimes it shows like how old you are. You know, growing up with the Sega and the NES and stuff, you're like, what just happened to selling a game?
Now you listen to me, Sonny. Back in my days,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the whole thing to buying games online, and probably a good testament to why Amazon's doing so well.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with those jerks.
Yeah, now that they have, you know, release day delivery for free on a lot of games.
It's almost worth paying the extra money to get it there that day so you don't have to deal with people sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and if you're a Prime member, then you get it for free.
It's true.
Well, you get the delivery for free at least.
I'm not sure
if I am. No, but I mean, the whole thing with the DLC just seems kind of ridiculous. I mean, I would even rather them go and get you like an item, like a t-shirt or whatever. I mean, that makes a lot more sense to me than DLC. And then appealing to that, to your senses, saying, oh, you want more exclusive content? You want something that not everybody else is going to get? You know, just the people that buy it here? Well, here you go. Here's a skin. When people see you online, they know where you bought it.
Yeah.
And then
that
that's awesome. And then they say, okay, everybody, here you go. Give me $2 and it's yours. So it's kind of like you kind of get duped.
I've explained my story of my Mortal Kombat skin fiasco.
Did you ever get all of
them? Well, I went out of my way to buy them on eBay. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have them all. And nobody else is going to have them. And then 2 days later, and this was during the PSN outage, so I couldn't even get them. I had all the cards that had, you know, Reptile, blah, 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 blah. Once PSN was back up, then they announced, oh, all the classic skins are back. I'm like, well, that's $80 down the drain. That was cool.
You said you paid like $80 and they were selling it for 10?
Yeah. That was painful.
Yeah, that sounds pretty painful. Another victim to this pre-ordering nonsense.
Yeah. Again, I understand what it is. I understand it as a good business practice, but like I said, as a consumer, it's just infuriating.
Oh, it is, but it's the only industry that does it too, because it's not like you can pre-order anything else.
Yeah.
Or at least having pre-ordering in the spotlight like this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of places will notify you when new products come in, but you know, saying, oh, you got to pre-order, and they try to sweeten or artificially sweeten the pot by getting you to pick one outlet over the other.
Yeah.
It just seems dishonest. And especially when places like, you know, GameStop will, you know, try to give you a pitch about how you need to pre-order one thing or the other. And, you know, they take your money. They make you do all this stuff.
The biggest thing is that if you don't pick up the game, they keep whatever money you put down on it. And the only thing you can get back is in-store credit, you know. That's kind of the frustrating thing sometimes. And on top of that, you know, I understand that they got to have like a set time period, but it if I remember right, I can't remember what it was, but it seemed so short to me that they wouldn't, you know, hold that game for you. But it is what it is. I guess my biggest gripe is just that, like, it seems like a lack of respect and customer service on their end to somebody that's coming in to go and purchase a game and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it totally is a complete lack of respect to the customer and to everybody else. That's the society we live in.
It's kind of a downer to go ahead and end the topic on that, isn't it?
That is going to bring us to the end of the podcast. So we would like to thank the Zombiehood guys for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
And why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of you?
Well, you can get a hold of us and see the webcomic at www.zombiehood.com. And you can follow Ian, which is at, or follow Ian on Twitter, which is at Ian Corral.
Yeah, and we'll have all those links in the show notes. And you can follow New Gamer Nation on Twitter at New Gamer Nation. Check out the website at newgamernation.com. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/newgamernations. Please make sure to go on iTunes and rate the podcast. Really helps us out and gets the show out to more people. So we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. We'd like to thank our guests for coming on. It was fun as always. And we will be back soon. Thanks.